Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out. And when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish-resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game. And that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to triplecrownjewelry.com and lead the league in drip.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Baseball America's College Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk college baseball.
I'm Teddy Cahill. This is Mike Lanana with me. We're ready to talk college baseball. It's another week, another Baseball America College Podcast, another new top 25 to talk about, Mike. It's a good Monday. It's a brand new look top 25. I mean, there's a lot to dig into after this weekend.
It's an insane top 25. Last night's call was, I know for me, it was one of the most difficult. It's probably the most difficult top 25 we've had to put together this year, I think, from top to bottom.
I would agree with that, and I would include the preseason. When we're starting from scratch, this was harder than that, I would say.
Yeah, it's just because you go into, you see all the surprising losses. You have SEC play now where a lot of these teams are beating up on each other. You have the transitive property in play here. You're trying to figure out how that works in here with poll mechanics. You know, really there was no place in the poll, no area in the poll that was untouched. I mean, everything required some kind of tinkering, some sort of change. And it was difficult. It was a long call. But if you haven't seen what we came up with, that poll obviously is on our website right now. And Florida is back at number one, and Oregon State all the way down to number five. It's a rough week for the Beavers.
Yeah, Oregon State has been, I think last week they had been number one 13 of the last 18 weeks. And then this week, they haven't lost a Pac-12 series since 2016. And this week they were going to Utah, which went into the weekend at 4-19 overall. And just one series win last weekend against Sac State. And so, of course, Oregon State lost that series.
Predict ball.
Yeah, it was a stunning series result that's probably going to be the upset of the year. I kind of find it hard to believe that we're going to see another one like that. But it's possible. We still have half a year of this. There are like 8 weekends left for us to somehow match Utah beating Oregon State. And, you know, I feel like Oregon State maybe was due for this kind of series.
Yeah.
Their pitching had been a little inconsistent. Pat Casey hadn't been thrilled with it over the last couple weeks. Nick Madrigal is still out. Andy Armstrong has done a nice job filling in, but you take out the Pac-12 player of the year, potentially the best player in the country, it has an effect. And it is very difficult to pitch in Salt Lake City. you know, there is that aspect of it, and Utah had home field advantage and all the rest of that, and yet none of this still makes any sense, does it, Mike?
No, it makes no sense whatsoever. Zero sense. You know, you have to tip your cap, though, to Utah, obviously. I mean, it's not just a one-sided thing. I mean, congrats to Utah, who have, what was it, 6 of the last 7 games they've won now? Or something.
That is correct. After starting the year 0-13, they're now 6-7 in their last 13 games.
Yeah, so it's, you know, they're improving. A team that lost 13 games in a row did take a series against Oregon State, which went 27-3 in the Pac-12 just last year.
I will say that Utah was not as bad as 0-13. You know, that also was, I felt like, slightly deceiving. But
yeah,
again.
No, it's fair enough. And I agree with your assessment of Oregon State that they were due for this at some point. I do think at some point they're going to slip up a little bit just with the injury to Madrigal, some of the shakiness on the mound that you mentioned, and just given law of averages, the way they performed over this last year and a half is, I mean, it certainly didn't seem sustainable. I mean, they're human. They're kids. I mean, it was going to happen at some point. I just didn't think it would be this weekend. I thought it would come against Stanford or UCLA or someone of that nature. I didn't think it would come against, you know, a team that was 4-19 coming into this weekend. With that said, though, you got to tip your cap to Utah, and you also have to tip your cap to Florida, who took care of business this weekend in impressive fashion against Vanderbilt and moved right back up to the number one spot.
Yeah, so Florida, you know, has played back-to-back top 10 series, beating Arkansas and then sweeping Vanderbilt. They threw in another midweek win against Florida State and Jacksonville on Tuesday. So that's, what is that? That's now six straight wins, against top 10 opponents. And their game against Vanderbilt, their game two of that series, wrapped up before Oregon State finished its series against Utah, also on Saturday. You know, so before, we knew that Florida had won this series before we knew that Oregon State had actually lost against Utah. And regardless of what happened in Salt Lake City Saturday evening, I was going to be arguing for Florida to be number one. I think what's happened over the last 2 weeks has been incredibly loud. They have done just about everything that, you know, there's been one small hiccup this season. They lost back-to-back games against UCF in midweek a few weeks ago. But they're 25-5. They don't have a losing weekend. They're, you know, again, this last couple weeks has been this really incredible run against a very, very difficult opposition. And the Gators are just rolling along, and they, to me, clearly look like the best team in the country. I've obviously said a lot about their rotation before, but their offense has been very impressive so far this season, and they're finding ways to win close games, and obviously a large part of that is Michael Byrne at the back end of the bullpen, who became Florida's all-time saves leader, despite the fact that he went into last season, he was not supposed to be the closer. I think a year ago he had something like 3 career saves, and now he has 26. Very impressive overall from Florida. Finding different ways to win and finding ways to win a lot of close games. They were close games last weekend against Arkansas for the most part, and on Florida State it was a 1-0 win. They've also shown the ability to score runs in bunches, and you know, I'm just overall very impressed with that team. And, you know, at the midpoint of the season, they, again, look like a clear-cut number one.
Yeah, I mean, to me, any of the issues we may have had with Florida last year, which weren't many. They won the national championship. It's hard to be too nitpicky, but
there was a time, about this time last year, there was, I don't want to say panic, but that's actually probably accurate to what was happening in some corners of the fan base. And there were some real concerns at this point, this time last year.
Yeah, you look at what they did last year. They had a lot more difficulty in midweek games. They opened SEC play, getting swept by Auburn. Things at that point looked maybe a little bit shaky. They were having some offensive struggles. You look at the team this year, I mean, it's... And again, these are the defending, reigning national champs from a year ago. They've hit 46 home runs this year, which they hit 53 all of last year, so they're already ahead of that pace. Offensively, they're just a different team, just the way they're clicking. I mean, we've talked a lot about Jonathan India. Will Dalton's had a great year for them offensively. I mean, they've really just been firing on all cylinders. You mentioned Michael Byrne solidifying the back end of the bullpen. They're winning midweek games other than that little slip-up that you mentioned early on. They're winning their midweeks. They're taking care of business on the weekends against premium competition. And this is a team very much on a mission, it seems like, to repeat as national champs. And certainly, given what they've done so far, given the talent on the roster, I mean, they're the odds-on favorite.
Yeah, I mean, they're my pick coming into the year, surprising exactly no one, I'm sure. But, you know, they're playing like it. And, you know, right now, it's hard to see a team beating them. It's going to happen at some point, I think, though. They are going to slip up and lose a series. That, you know, it's just likely to happen. But when you actually like look at them and break them down, and it's hard to find weaknesses. That's the best rotation in the country for me. I know Stanford has an argument for that, but that's the best rotation in the country for me. That's, you know, an All-American closer. That's an offense that's really firing on all cylinders. JJ Schwartz, Will Dalton, John India. That's a great heart of the order. And they have much more depth on the mound this year than last year, which is legitimately scary. That is legitimately scary. So that's Florida. And then out in the SEC West, there was another a big showdown there. Ole Miss hosting Arkansas. And Ole Miss comes out with a win. Another very close series for Arkansas on the road against a really good team. You know, they wind up losing the two games they lost by one run. You know, that's so Arkansas has now lost back-to-back series at Florida, at Ole Miss. Of the four games they lost, three of them have been by one run. Like, that team is, it's right there. I still really believe in the Razorbacks, but the Rebels this season have been off to an incredible start. You know, they're sitting at 25-4, tied with Florida for the most wins in the country. They're up to number three in the top 25. That's their highest ranking since the end of the 2014 season. Obviously, that year they did very well in Omaha. And this team has really, I mean, they, like Florida, are doing it in several different ways. You know, their rotation is really good. Their bullpen is crazy deep. Parker Karachi has taken over as closer from preseason All-American Dallas Wolfolk, who hasn't been terrible himself. You know, he has like a 1.5 ERA and six saves. They have a lot of options to go to there. And the offense, which was really the problem for Ole Miss last season, they were very young. Well, this year they're a year older and a year better. And they're showing that they can score a lot of runs. There's a lot of depth to that lineup. There's power throughout the lineup. And I've just been very impressed with Ole Miss. And you can read more about them and that series and Off the Bat this week on baseballamerica.com. But, you know, again, they're up to number three, Mike. And, you know, they look right now, having beaten Arkansas, they look like the favorites out West.
Yeah, no doubt at this point. I mean, just looking at the overall record, you know, for us, there was a little bit, you know, looking at their non-conference schedule, it wasn't the strongest non-conference schedule of these cluster of SEC teams that we've had here in the top 10 and around the top 10. But they've really, you know, since SEC play has begun, proven that they belong here where they are at number three in this poll. I mean, it's very impressive to not only to the week before go to Texas A&M and win that series, and then to take down Arkansas, which, as you mentioned, is a very talented team, a team that is more talented and has played better than its record might indicate to this point. Certainly very impressive, and I do think the Rebels are a more complete team. They're an older team than they were last year. The bullpen is really what stands out to me with the numbers that they put up to this point, and you know, their starting rotation too. While it may not be at quite the same level as Florida's is at a whole another level, is just an elite rotation. Their rotation is very good too. Led by Ryan Rollison, and it's a good group, and they've pitched very well to this point. They've hit just enough, and I think they're a dangerous team. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a common thread with the top three teams in the rankings right now. Florida, Stanford, Ole Miss all have exceptional rotations. And they're really riding them to this point. And that's not to take away with any other part of those teams, but you know, with those rotations give them the edge basically any weekend. And you know, they can do that all season long, I think, and stay in games and let their offense, you know, go to work and then feel good when they do have to turn it over to the bullpen, that their starters have gotten them pretty deep in the game and you know, given them a really good chance to win. And you know, those three teams, they have clearly shown, you know, they've done everything, you know, we could ask them to do to this point.
I mean, to have three consistent starters on the weekend, that's huge in college baseball. I mean, you can win and be successful during the regular season without three defined guys. We've seen it before. But once you get into the postseason, to be able to have those three guys, and usually four guys, four or five guys, ideally, to be able to lean on and to have confidence in, you run them out there, that's huge, and that's a difference maker. So these teams, certainly these top three, are incredibly scary, you know, come postseason time, just given what they have on the mound, not even talking about their offensive pieces, which, you know, it's certainly a lot to like there as well.
Absolutely. So that gets us through the, you know, those three teams, Florida State, Oregon State, that's your top five again this week, slightly different order, but the same top five as I believe the last 2 weeks now, or I guess just last week. After that, we have the top 10 looks different. Teams six through nine lost series this weekend, and one of those was Arkansas at Ole Miss, but 7, 8, 9 all lost in upset fashion. And so it looks a little different in the top 10. And we got North Carolina State up to 6. Mm-hmm. Texas Tech, Clemson coming back to the top 10. They've been there before. Arkansas at 9. And then Duke at number 10. And I want to focus on these two North Carolina teams, State and Duke. State is that number 6 is the highest they've been this season. Mm-hmm. They are winning the ACC, whatever division that is, Mike.
It's the Atlantic Division.
All right. Maybe I'll learn this one.
You'll figure it out. And Duke is winning the Coastal.
They are winning the Coastal, and they are both 9-3. They're tied for the ACC lead. And this is Duke's first ever top 10 ranking. We've been doing this poll for 37 years. Well, not me and Mike. We haven't. We're not 37. But Baseball America's...
We're in our 20s still.
Baseball America's been putting this poll together for 37 years, and Duke has never been in the top 10 before. So it's an incredible accomplishment by the Blue Devils through the start of the season. 24-5, that's just one game, one win less than the national leaders to this point. That 9-3 start in the ACC is their best start in conference play since 1961, which is also the last time they went to the College World Series. Also, I was looking at the 1961 schedule last night, and college baseball, way different back then. So many fewer games. But what the Blue Devils have done this season, I mean, this is a team that was kind of a trendy dark horse in the ACC. Mm-hmm. They went out opening weekend. They lost a series at Vanderbilt. But since then, it's gone very, very well for this team. And they're pitching it a lot better, I think. And that's true of State as well. Both of those teams pitching it a lot better than we expected. I think in both cases, we figured they'd be pretty offensive. Mm-hmm. But we weren't quite sure about their pitching staffs. But Duke, State leads the ACC in ERA. I believe Duke is second. And it's just been a very impressive step forward by some of those guys.
Yeah, you know, I think if you would have asked me, hey, Mike, on April 2nd, what North Carolina teams would you have in the top 10 of our poll? I think we both liked, as you said, we both liked NC State and Duke coming into this season as regional caliber teams, as teams that we thought would hit their way through and could maybe surprise a little bit. Certainly, I don't think either of us saw a top 10, at least, you know, to the extent of, you know, both of them leading their respective divisions in the ACC right now. It's certainly surprising, and it's impressive, and it's a great job by both coaching staffs. You know, specifically with Duke, you know, this is a team that last year brought in a really good recruiting class, a team that really, I mean, has been on the cusp for the last couple of years. Did make a regional. I keep saying regional. I don't know why I keep saying that. I'm combining words here. But did make a regional a couple of years ago. And a team that certainly has talent. And you talk to scouts in the area, and they've talked up their talent coming into this year. A large part of that was because of what Griffin Conine was doing in the summer. A large part of that was because of Jimmy Herron and the hitters in that lineup. But you're right. It has been pitching so far that's really carried them. I mean, Adam Lasky, a guy who he was a blue chip recruit coming in for them, struggled last year. He's taken a jump. He's shown growth necessary to be a Friday starter in the ACC. And you look at his numbers, he's 5-1 with 2.79 ERA. He's been very good so far. He's limited his walks. He struck out 38 and 42 innings. And then you have Mitch Stallings, who's been very solid behind him, and a veteran in Brian Day, who has been, to this point, serviceable. But their bullpen, their bullpen with Jack Lebosky, a two-way guy for them, has been just dynamic at the back of games. Ethan DeCaster has been really, really good. 26 strikeouts to two walks in 23 innings, a 0.39 ERA, and he's a funky guy who throws from a lower arm slot. Really tough to pick up. A guy who really impressed me when I saw him. I mean, there are a lot of pieces to like on this pitching staff.
Yeah, and it's a group that has shown what they can do. Their defense is really picking them up too. You know, that's they're one of the better defensive teams by fielding percentage in the ACC. And you know, I think it's a solid infield, and they have some guys that can really go get it in the outfield. If Jimmy Herron's your left fielder, you know, I feel like you're in a pretty good spot. And obviously, left field in Durham with the big wall there is not the easiest spot. It does take some nuance, and he's definitely used to that now as a third year player. And offensively, they're doing this without Conine having the kind of the season that was anticipated. He's hitting .233. He has 6 home runs. He homered yesterday. It was a monster shot against Notre Dame. But they've had to drop him in the lineup. And, you know, if you told me that Duke was off to this incredible start, I would have said, like, okay, so they're, Griffin Conine's hitting like .400, right? But the fact that they're doing it without that, I think is all the more impressive. And, you know, the schedule does toughen up a little bit from here.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is fair to say that, the second half of their ACC schedule is harder than their first half. But when you start talking about teams, that can potentially, be in the mix at the end of the season at the top of the ACC, I think we have to say that Duke is there. And, it's an exciting growth of that program that, for so long had been, they hadn't made a regional since 61 until 2016. They also have some incredible names. And Mike, I asked this on Twitter. I'm going to ask you. You are our college baseball name expert, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Who is the better Duke baseball name, Chase Cheek or Griffin Conine?
I think the answer is neither. I think it's Al Pesto.
That is Al Pesto is a good one as well.
Yeah, I think I got to go Al Pesto. Who hasn't he was projected maybe to be their closer this year. He hasn't been, but he's a guy who, just like my pasta, I like it al pesto. That wasn't great execution there on that joke, but in any event, Duke has done a great job. You have to credit what Chris Pollard has done as head coach, what Josh Jordan has done as recruiting coordinator there, bringing in the talent that he has. It's not easy doing what they've done, given that, UNC and NC State have been sort of the baseball powers here in this area. So certainly very, very impressive what they've done. And the same goes to State this year with what they've been able to put together, now climbing up to number 6, off to a 9-3 start, leading the Atlantic Division, which is a stacked division. It's the tougher division in the ACC to this point. I don't think there's any question about that.
We'll get back to State in a second. I don't want to be super like into the weeds on this, but like I don't think there's as much separation in the divisions as it feels like there is, because State, Clemson, Florida State, all in the top 10, all in the Atlantic. I think we still like Louisville. So that's your Atlantic top end, but the bottom end, Wake Forest is now 11-17 overall, and they just got swept by North Carolina. Notre Dame, Boston College at the bottom of that division at 4-8. And the other side, you know, Duke is the lone ranked team in that division. But I think North Carolina, Georgia Tech, like, they've shown that they're pretty close. Miami is still 6-6 in the league. And then Virginia Tech, Pitt, and UVA are your bottom end. So I don't know that the top end of the Atlantic is crazy right now. Really good. But the bottom end is maybe just as bad, potentially. I don't know. The ACC is so strange. But anyway, not to take away from what North Carolina State is doing. They're doing it, and they're pitching really well. And Josh McClain at the top of the order, and Brett Kinnaman in the outfield, very dynamic group.
And they're a team, too. I mean, the big question that we had with them was pitching. And as you said, they're leading the ACC in ERA right now, which is a surprise. Certainly not something that I expected to see, given the arms that they had and the questions that they had with their starting rotation. And really, they've been leaning on veteran guys, the guys that they've had the last few years. A guy like Brian Brown, who, you know, he's 4-0, 0.4 run ERA. I mean, he's been...
Is that good?
That's good. He's been untouchable this year, and he's a guy who's going to top out at 87 on a good day, but he has a filthy changeup. He has a lot of movement on all his pitches. He's not a big-time pro guy by any stretch, but he's a guy who at the college level, if you throw strikes and you change speeds enough and you have a lot of movement on your pitches, you're going to be really tough to square up.
Especially from the left side.
Especially from the left side. Johnny Piemont has pitched really well to this point. He's a grad student for them. He's been there forever. He's like 7'6" or however tall he is. He's 4-0, 2.93, and he's throwing strikes. You know, he's going to be 88 to 91 for the most part, but he's throwing strikes, he's pounding the zone, and he's a competitor. He's a guy who's pitched in the ACC for years now, for 10, 20 years. I don't know how long he's pitched in the ACC, but he's been around for a while. You know, they still need to figure out a third guy, Michael Beilein, who probably has the best stuff of that group and the most pro upside of that group. He's struggled the last 2 weeks. On Fridays, he's been knocked out early. I think it'll eventually click for him, but you know, I think if it does click, and when it does click for him, I mean, that's going to take them to another level, because he has the stuff to be a very good starter for them. So certainly, you know, for both teams, great starts to this season. They deserve to be in the top 10 given what they've done so far. We'll see if they're able to maintain that. You know, the schedule is going to ramp up for Duke especially, as you said. Although this week they go to Wake Forest, which Wake Forest has been really tough at home. I mean, they beat Florida State at home, they beat Louisville at home, so that's not going to be an easy series. And then they go to Florida State, and then they play NC State, which should be a fun showdown. Maybe it's still a top 10 showdown by that point. We'll see what happens with the rankings, but certainly a lot of intrigue there.
It's a great year for that to have happened in the ACC, because that's not a series that has to happen. They're in separate divisions. That is not protected. You know, State's protected series is North Carolina. So fortunately, the ACC schedule works out that, you know, we get Duke and State in a year that you know, both teams are very exciting teams, and you know, hopefully we can get some nice atmosphere for you know, that kind of rivalry game.
Kind of.
It's no Duke UNC. But it's a local rivalry, I guess.
Yeah. But, you know, as far as the 25, and, you know, another conference for me that's really tough to figure out right now is the Big 12. And you and I were talking about this a little bit before we went on here. We brought in Oklahoma this week at number 19 after taking down Baylor. They're 20-10 and a perfect 6-0 in the Big 12 right now.
That is their best conference start since 1984, when they were in the Big 8 and when Mike and I were not born.
Correct. So that's good enough to get into our top 25. They're at number 19. We have Texas Tech, who, you know, they had a couple of tough weekends early on this month against good competition. They've seemingly gotten back into a groove. They're 3-3 in the Big 12, coming off a series win against West Virginia, which is a good team. 23-6 overall. They're back up to number 7. But then we have the rest of the Big 12 that I think we're still trying to figure out a little bit. TCU, a team that had a four-peat in Omaha is stunningly not in the Tuning Five this week.
It's the first time since 2014.
And it feels weird. It doesn't feel right to me. But, I mean, you look at what they've done this year. They just got swept at Oklahoma State this weekend. They're 14-10 overall. And, you know, there's still, you know, there's talent on that team, but they did lose a lot from last year. And I think they're still trying to get their feet under them a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's a team that we just kind of penciled in for a reload, not a rebuild. But it does have to be acknowledged the many, many significant losses they suffered from last year's team. And, you know, it's taken them a little bit of time. And, you know, I still think that it's a pretty good team. You know, I think that they're going to be at the heart, in the heart of this at the end of it. But, you know, right now they're not playing like it. That sweep in Stillwater was not that was not good. That's an Oklahoma State team that struggled early in the season, but is clearly finding itself in the last few weeks. But you know, getting swept, falling to 3-3 in the conference, that's tough for TCU. And you know, the conference here is usually pretty tightly compact, and you know, getting swept in any series is you know, going to put you in a tough spot in terms of the conference standings. But you know, this Oklahoma team, I really like this team. I've really liked this team, you know, since the start of the season. And they're playing very well right now. And, you know, most of the schedule has been at home to this point. Pretty much all of the schedule has been at home to this point since opening weekend. And so it is going to be a little interesting to see how they fare this week when they go back out on the road. They have a midweek at Oral Roberts. Then they go down to TCU. And obviously that the Horned Frogs are going to be, you know, looking to get back on track. You know, they might be angry. They might be angry Horned Frogs.
They could be.
And, you know, so it's not...
The Woobirds are going to be out, and they're going to be wooing. There's no question.
You know, so Oklahoma's going to face a tough test this week. You know, even though TCU's maybe a little down right now, it's going to be a tough test for Oklahoma. And you know, I like the veteran makeup of this club. You know, they've returned so much on the pitching staff. They have several hitters back, including Steele Walker, you know, the preseason All-American outfielder. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they fare this week when they go back out on the road, because that's a team that at home is 19-5, but is just 1-5 away from Norman.
Yeah, no, it is going to be, I mean, this is going to be an excellent test for them, as you mentioned. And, you know, maybe this is something that, you know, we get a little more clarity in the Big 12. Maybe it just confuses us even more. I'm not entirely sure.
We can't ignore Texas either. I mean, they're 6-3, but they just lost a series at Kansas State. so, you know, this is the Big 12 this year. And I think this was kind of the Big 12 last year a little bit, except that TCU and Texas Tech kind of rolled through the other teams a little more smoothly. Mm-hmm. But it's a league that beats up on itself. And, you know, it's definitely doing that this year. And this year, I think it's lacking that elite team at the top. Texas Tech still might be that, maybe. But, you know, it's lacking that elite top that last year helped push it to the top of the RPI. This year, it's just a group of really good teams, any of whom can clearly beat anyone on any given weekend.
Yeah, no doubt. To me, you know, I still think Texas Tech is going to ultimately end up as the team in this conference. I know they've, you know, we mentioned early on they struggled a little bit that series at Kentucky and then dropped that series to Baylor to start Big 12 play. But I just think that given the talent on the team, given what they've done the last few years, and just looking at the non-conference schedule that they play and always play, they challenge themselves every year. I think they're the team, and I, you know, for us, I know we have some readers who say we don't always give them their due, but I'm giving them their due right here, Texas Tech.
I will also say when we're looking at this Big 12 race, they're really tough in Lubbock, and they get Oklahoma and Texas in Lubbock this year. They have to go to TCU, they have to go to Oklahoma State still, but you know, getting Oklahoma and Texas in Lubbock this season, I think is big. Mm-hmm. And that may, like, I agree that they're the best team in the Big 12, but that home field advantage may just be enough, like, if they needed it to push them over the top. But I think that they'll, that looks like the team to beat for sure in the conference.
How the pieces fall in behind them remains to be seen. I think the TCU-Oklahoma series this weekend is certainly a big one to watch. That might give us more answers here. I think for TCU, it's, you know, kind of time to start winning sooner rather than later. For Oklahoma, it's more, okay,
is it time
keep this
for the
going?
Sooners to start winning sooner rather
okay,
than later?
Okay, let's not. No, that's going to, yeah. I see what you did there, though, and I respect it. I respect it, but that's going to get messy really quickly. So let's steer clear of that one. But, yeah, so the Big 12, it's a bit messy right now, but that's okay. You know, that's what the regular season is for.
Yeah, I mean, and we're about halfway through the year for most of these teams. You know, and it's okay that we don't have clarity. That's what the second half of the season is for, that we're really getting to the heart of conference play here. And, you know, teams are going to win some series that are going to be surprising. Teams are going to lose some series that you're going to wonder what's going on. But that's the beauty of conference play. These teams know each other so well. You know, and as we get into it, they present difficult matchups and you know, all sorts of things. And so the next 7 weeks of the season here are going to be obviously very exciting. And, you know, potentially we've got some more upsets in us.
I hope so.
So Mike, before we get out of here, your favorite or your pick to win pitcher of the year, an award that does not actually exist, was Colton Eastman.
Yeah.
And he this week had a pretty good week.
He did a pretty good week. He joined a very exclusive club this year. The no-hitter club. he threw the 17th no-hitter this year already, which is a record, or at least ties a record.
It's a lot.
And he was my pick for pitcher of the year, which is not an award, but it's still something that we do. And he's gotten off to, I mean, he's been good so far this year. He's 3-2, 2.47. Obviously the no-hitter is an incredible achievement for him, and, you know, joins some big time names as well, you know, among Cal State Fullerton pitchers who have accomplished that feat. Kirk Sorlos, the pitching coach at TCU, comes to mind. You know, and the, you know, the Fullerton, the Cal State Fullerton, they're 10-15 overall. You know, still a team that is trying to find its footing, a team that we thought very highly of in the preseason. You know, the Big West is another conference that I think we both think is a little bit down this year. Certainly there isn't a lot of clarity in that conference at this point. There isn't a lot there to it's tough to predict, but, you know, maybe this is the start of things. At the very least, maybe it's the start of things for Colton Eastman, because they did lose the other two games after that start. So it may not be the start of things for Fullerton, but it's a nice feather in the cap of Colton Eastman.
Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of incredible pitching performances, my attention was drawn to this by the Auburn Twitter account. Casey Mize has not walked a batter in literally a month.
That's pretty good.
And he turned in another exceptional start this weekend. Auburn lost a series to Mizzou afterwards, but Casey Mize just continues to roll right along. And, you know, Eastman, Mize, you know, these are guys that, you know, we're expected to lead the rotations. And to this point, they're both holding up their ends of the bargain. And, you know, it's been, how they finish the rest of the season is going to be incredibly important, both to their teams and to their draft stock. And of course, we'll be keeping an eye on both of those things. But Mike, is there anything else from around the country that you wanted to mention this week?
You know, the only thing I would say is hopefully this week it's a little bit easier to put together the top 25, because this was, I enjoy the upsets as much as anybody. But let's see. I'm kind of curious to see if, you know, how much this changes from one week to the next. Let's see if, you know, some of the teams that have played well to this point have played their way in the top 10. Let's see if they're able to hold their spots there and hold serve and do well this weekend. That's what I'm looking forward to this week. And, you know, there are some really big series, as we mentioned, that we're looking forward to, you know, specifically, you know, that Oklahoma TCU series is one that's very interesting to me. So that's my overall thought, and, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I think the schedule this week is a little bit, I don't want to say lighter, but there are less, like, top 25 teams playing each other this week, which means that there's more potential for upsets, but also that inherently there should be a little less movement this week, that, you know, we don't have the situation where top 10 teams are going to beat up on each other. You know, so we'll see what that leads to in the rankings. But, you know, you mentioned Oklahoma TCU. We also have, you know, Coastal playing South Alabama in a big series in the Sun Belt. You know, that could go a long way to deciding that conference title. You know, so we have some interesting series like that. And, you know, we also have, you know, Louisville and North Carolina State, like you mentioned, and
Even Georgia at Vanderbilt is interesting to me.
Yeah, absolutely. The SEC never fails to provide us with a few interesting series. Yeah. And that's one of them this week. And, you know, even Ole Miss going to Mississippi State, you know, that's a huge rivalry series, of course. And the Bulldogs have not started SEC play well, but you know they're going to be up for this series. And the Rebels also are looking for a little bit of revenge after what happened in Oxford last year when Mississippi State went in there and won that series. That's going to be a fun one. The schedule might not have the kind of marquee series, as many of them this week, but it's still going to be an exciting week around the country, I think. You know, so after that, another exciting week. We'll be back here next week on Monday. We'll have a new Top 25 to talk about. We'll have a new podcast. There will be all kinds of new content over at baseballamerica.com. So be sure to check that out. Be sure to check that out throughout this week as well, and to follow Mike and I on Twitter. He's M. Lanana. I'm at Ted Cahill. I'm excited that I'm back in the studio this week. So hopefully the podcast quality is a little better for you guys. And also that we're back on iTunes. I know some of you had asked about that. And so that situation has been resolved. So you can continue to follow us on all your various favorite podcast platforms, whether that's iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play or whatever. And I believe in all of those cases, certainly in iTunes, I know, you can rate us. And if you rate us, if you like our podcast, you know, feel free to go ahead and do that. And maybe give us 5 stars. I don't know. I feel like maybe we could get 5 stars.
I would like 5 stars. I would prefer 5 to 4.
Yeah.
Certainly. I mean, whatever, we're not pushing the issue here, but if you want to give us 5 stars, I mean, it's not, you know, I'm okay with it. I'll take it.
We're open to the idea.
Yeah. Just sit on it. Just think about it for a little while, you know, discuss it with your loved ones and then rank us, give us 5 stars.
All right. So remember to check out all the content at baseballamerica.com. Our top 25 is powered by Louisville Slugger, so thank you to Louisville Slugger. And for Mike, I'm Teddy Cahill. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.